My name's Kerry Fielding. I originate from Oxford, but I have a Welsh name and now live in South Wales. I have just finished an MSc in Sustainability and Adaptation Planning at the Centre for Alternative Technology. I'm waiting to hear how I did, but I'm told I did very well.
Okay, Kerry, now I know, and I've known you for a few years in environmental campaigning.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us what you make of the most recent incarnation, which is Extinction Rebellion, and particularly this new offshoot, which is, it's called Insulate Britain, which has been doing these motorway protests?
Yes, well, as you know, Tony, we'd be classed as veterans of the road protests. By the media. So yeah, long experience of environmental campaigning, direct action, and in fact even kind of, you know, blockading Shell petrol stations over issues in the Niger Delta.
Well, that's right. I can remember actually standing shoulder to shoulder with you in Oxford, blockading a Shell petrol station after the murder execution of Ken Sarawira, who was a playwright over in Nigeria, who was murdered by employees, basically mercenaries employed by Shell petrol, because he was leading a very popular campaign in Nigeria against Shell. So ironic that in the week that we've got these queues outside petrol stations, that we were there actually blockading Shell. And, people could, of course, they could go down the road and get petrol from somebody else, BP, Texaco or something in those days.
Yeah.
But this is, it's an issue that some people feel quite strongly about, isn't it?
It's the lesson I took from those actions, Tony, particularly blockading the petrol station. You remember how tempers flared very quickly. And, you know, it was a matter of trying to de-escalate situations, but people were very angry, and so the lesson I took from that direct action is really, first of all, try not to alienate your public. You want to win hearts and minds. You want to win the public over to your way of thinking. You don't want to make them angry. You don't want to make them late, and all of that. Now, I mean, this Insulate Britain, I mean, couldn't make it up, right? Really, stranger than fiction. I have just submitted my dissertation on how to sustainably insulate the United Kingdom and our old leaky housing stock. And then all of a sudden, there's a new direct action group blocking the M25, causing huge delays, really, disrupting people's lives at a time when they are already seriously disrupted. And I've checked their website, I've read their report, and it's very short. They're very short on details. So that's the other lesson I took from direct action. One is don't alienate potential allies, and the second was I just lost that thread.
Well, the second is make sure you're clear with your facts, because you're gonna have BBC News sticking a camera in your face, and you better have a good explanation as to what you're doing there.
Not just an explanation, but preferably a viable alternative. If we're going to protest against something, we need to have alternatives to propose, viable, sustainable alternatives. Those are the two key important things, neither of which Insulate Britain have. However, that said, I don't want to diss them totally. They have raised a very important subject. It's just that they're quite misinformed and misguided. But what they have done is created the opportunity, opened a conversation that can potentially sort of open up the facts for people, you know?
But I mean, this is an enormous debate. It's been going on really for the last, I suppose, 15 years mainly. And actually, within the last few years, we've seen governments around the Western world, particularly after Paris, actually start to embrace all these targets. It's very much in the public mind. And, you know, it would seem to me that most of the public are rather sceptical about the idea, for example, that they shouldn't have, you know, a gas boiler in their home, that they should give up their petrol vehicles, you know, take it to the scrapyard or whatever and buy a brand new. There's also, of course, these congestion charges going on. They're trying to do one here in Bristol. They've just extended the pollution charge or whatever it's called in London. That means that, you know, even on a Sunday, you're having to pay £30 or so to bring a vehicle into London because of the congestion. But if you've got a brand new car costing you whatever, 30-40 grand, you don't have to pay it. So there's quite a lot of skepticism out there about the way this is all going.
Quite well. Okay, so you're right, it has been at least 15 years that more like 20 years that the debate on how we insulate UK housing has been going on. Okay, now the problem, the main problem with Insulate Britain is that they're fundamentally missing the point. You know, there's no debate over whether or not we need to insulate our old leaky houses. It is actually a statutory requirement that the government have signed up to of achieving net zero by 2050. And our homes are the biggest emission sector in the UK. So we need to do it. The big question is how and with what. And that's the point that Insulate Britain are missing. Because if their demands, if the government actually met their demands and turned around tomorrow and started, carried on wrapping British houses in plastic insulation, then we will perpetuate the same cycle of costs and problems that we've had over the Green Deal and Green Homes Grant. Okay, so basically the problem is, okay, so what do we do it with? And the big, what this really comes down to, if we're going to achieve net zero, it's not just about insulating our homes, but it's about using lower embodied energy materials. Okay, now plastic insulation, I just run you over a few facts briefly. Okay, so plastic insulation encompasses polystyrene, polyurethanes, phenols. But if we group plastic insulations together, I call them PCIs, petrochemical insulations. Okay, in 2007, so about 15 years ago, they had a 50% market share. This year, they have a dominate market with 75%. Okay, so their market share has grown by 25% in that period, plastic insulations. Over the same time, mineral wool, which is the only non-combustible insulation suitable for tall buildings, declined from 44% to 25%. Okay.
So is that because of cost? The mineral wool is more expensive?
No, it isn't to do with cost. It's largely to do with misinformation and falsified fire certification by Kingspan and Sellatex. Essentially misleading the industry and experts and specifiers and architects, everyone. They operated with false fire certification, claiming that their products were suitable for tall buildings. Now, they were cheaper. They are cheaper than mineral wool. So on tall buildings, of course, people went for the cheaper option. But the point is that these products were promoted for them under totally false credentials.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting, isn't it? It's very subtle, because although they were cheaper, it wasn't actually the cost that was driving it. It was falsifying their fire safety. This is very reminiscent of Grenfell, actually.
Yeah, quite. Well, exactly. So Kingspan, for okay, so now here's another thing. So basically, if the government turned around tomorrow to start insulation in the UK, it would be with plastics because it's their default setting. It's the market dominant material. It's the cheapest and it has the best U value and best sort of thermal conductivity value. Okay, so you need less thickness of it on the wall to achieve the same heat saving. However, it's completely impermeable. So plastic insulation, we know, traps both moisture and heat in buildings, leading to damp and mould, respiratory disease, and in summer overheating, trapping heat inside and leading to excess summer deaths. In a normal English summer, 2,000 people a year die from overheating in their homes. Okay, so a lot of this has been caused by this plastic insulation. On top of, we've got Grenfell. Okay, Grenfell also exposed the flammability and toxicity of these products. Most of those 72 victims died of cyanide poisoning. You know, it was gas and smoke, not fire, which is also having ongoing health effects for survivors and first responders, fire brigade. So all of that led to the cladding crisis, in which we've got now got hundreds of thousands of people unable to sell their flats, facing remediation bills of up to £100,000. And so far, the taxpayer have paid out over £5 billion for remediation just of tall buildings. So basically, the government's a bit stuck because that plastics are their default setting. And yet, on the other hand, this industry is delivering them nothing but costs, phenomenal costs, and actual installation failures, just endless problems. So they don't really know what to do.
When I first came across this Insulate Britain group, I thought I'd have a look because I had a sixth sense from memory that the government did have a free home insulation scheme anyway. And of course they do. If you go to govuk.co.uk/free-home-insulation, you come straight to the scheme which the government has to actually insulate people's homes for free. So I'm quite surprised. Maybe these M25 protests should be just literally waving this URL around because there already is a scheme to insulate people's homes for free.
Yep. However, that funding, which I think is 3.5 billion, is the leftovers from the Green Homes grant that in the course of writing my dissertation, the Tory government launched as the centrepiece of their 10-point recovery plan, launched for 6 months, extended, and then terminated at its original six-month deadline. So the money left over from that already failed program got funneled into, I think it's basically for social landlords or social tenants. So yes, there is a fund, a program. There's also still the eco program, which is funded from energy suppliers.
Okay, so just to say, I mean, this website, the government website, does say that it's been renewed. Green grant scheme for 2021. Grants available are for free loft insulation. They are for free cavity wall insulation, internal wall insulation, free attic room insulation, and free external wall insulation. So there's something, you know, there is definitely something out there to do what Insulate Britain seem to want to do.
Yeah. The problem is that we're doing it all with plastic, Tony. And plastic is the highest embodied energy insulation material.
Okay, so that effectively means that it's taken more energy than other products to actually produce the stuff in the first place.
Precisely. Okay, so a little bit about plastics, okay? If global plastic production was a country, it would be the fifth biggest emitter in the world. Okay, it's a huge global industry. Now, construction uses 25% of global plastic production. So it's very big. So we need to reduce the use of plastics in construction, simply to reduce embodied energy. For example, wood fiber insulation produced in Europe takes a tenth of the amount of energy to produce as plastics. Even mineral wool insulation, the only non-combustible insulation which is produced in Britain, involves quarrying basalt, melting it in a furnace and spinning it in a centrifuge. Even that uses about half the amount of energy to produce as plastic insulation. Now, so plastic insulation is massive global. The ingredients for it come from all over the world. They're dependent on non-renewable oil-based resources, so they're going to become rarer and more expensive anyway. And we just need to cut them out of the equation, basically. Would you like me to expand more?
Yes, please. Yeah.
So, okay. So, how do we reduce plastics? Use of plastics. Well, first of all, we've got a big problem. Plastics in Britain are big business. Okay. We produce 3.3 million tons a year of plastic materials in the UK, which is the third largest manufacturing sector. Okay, so plastic manufacturing is the third largest manufacturing sector in the UK. It produced in 2015, I think it was. Yeah, in 2015, we exported £7.5 billion worth of raw materials for plastic production elsewhere. Okay, those are HazChem. They're basically sort of hazardous chemical registered with special transport requirements, highly toxic chemicals, isocyanates, cyanates, MDIs. These things have been associated with well, in fact, even Bhopal in India in the 80s was related to polyurethane production. So it's a really nasty, toxic industry, big business in this country, lots of vested interests, of which plastic insulation is obviously just a part. Incidentally, our exports in 2015 were 7.5 billion. That was... Wow. But our imports were 11.6 billion.
No.
Yeah.
So I guess this is just part of the, the massive petrochemical industry. And they're trying, I suppose, to do this before either we run out of oil or else, there's a Middle East war or else everything goes over to, it's taxed out of existence, basically, the fossil fuels. What do you think?
Okay, well, I think actually the only way to do this is with policy, through policy. I just think the government need some really good pointers. One of them would be, so what I'm suggesting, the conclusion to my dissertation was a policy recommendation that the building sector adopt a similar ambitious target to that the Tories introduced for transport, i.e. no new petrol and diesel engines by 2030. And then they're counting on electric cars, innovation, design, sort of replacing those. Okay, so we need the same thing in the construction sector. So I propose that we have no new plastic insulation by 2030. That gives us 9 years in which to transition to natural fibre insulation in the UK.
I mean, is there actually anything at all in Insulate Britain's programme that acknowledges this enormous overuse of plastic and a potential way out of that?
Not that I've found. But
well, who knows? Maybe they'll pick up on what you're saying and start talking about that, hopefully.
Well, I hope so. I'd certainly be happy to give them some advice. But I have to be very careful because I can't share my dissertation until it's published. I can't actually sort of release any of my findings or, you know, information as such.
No, well, that's understandable. And it's great that you've given us a bit of a heads up on it, Kerry, you know, really important. I just wonder also, you know, if you had the ear of Extinction Rebellion, because I think we both agreed that the idea of just stopping cars on the M25 is pretty counterproductive in terms of getting the public behind your cause. Obviously, you're getting into the news, but in a negative way. And I think it's a bit of a cynical move to use this Insulate Britain name when actually most people realise this is just an offshoot of Extinction Rebellion to try and keep XR, you know, the XR brand intact whilst, you know, a lot of people are finding these protests quite annoying and, you know, actually it's being counterproductive. So if you had the ear of these protesters, what would you suggest other than, you know, just blocking motorways?
I'd say stop pissing people off, educate yourselves, and provide viable, positive alternatives.
In the big scheme of things, do you think there is a decent future for the planet, that the environment can be preserved? And because there are a lot of people that are suggesting that actually big money and big oil are simply making a transition from one form of massive overuse of energy to another now.
Oh, look, I mean, God, that's such a big question right there. I mean, personally, I'm still right on the, by nature, I'm an optimist. However, the last couple of years of learning, have really brought the facts home. You know, we can forget staying below 1.5 degrees. Even if we were to achieve net zero by 2050, we will still need to somehow suck CO2 out of the atmosphere at a scale that all the trees we could plant, or even better, seagrass around our coasts, which absorbs far more CO2 than even the Amazon rainforest. These measures, I don't know, Tony. I'm at a loss. We are right on the pivot point now. 20 years ago, we were protesting because we were trying to raise awareness and sort of get these issues into the public consciousness. They're there now. They're in the public consciousness, and they've been amplified every day by things like COVID, Brexit impacts, and pending COP summit in Glasgow. It's all coming to a head. And just at a time, the other big thing is that to achieve the levels of change we need multilateral cooperation. That is between the big nations of the world. And that's all falling apart. So,
well, it is starting to fall apart, isn't it? I'm a bit concerned about this too, reading recently that because of the spat between the Chinese and the British and the Americans over the new nuclear submarines in the Pacific, in the South China Sea, you know, the Australians starting to go nuclear And the French, big dispute with the French over this too, on a military side, that it might be that the French president and the Chinese president don't even come along to COP.
Well, I'm not sure the president, I'm not sure Xi Jinping was originally going to come. I'm sure there'll be a Chinese delegation. And now, to be honest, I think there's, again, a lot of media spin in the way that's been projected in the press. Okay, the fact is that China's carbon emissions program has, I mean, I know their emissions are still growing, but their environmental advances have been phenomenal compared to ours. In many ways, they're far more progressive on this than we are. Unfortunately, they are still catching up and they haven't hit their peak yet. So they're not likely to make major commitments, you know, when we're rattling sabers at them. But what the British government has done is to deflect attention away from their own inaction and failed targets. Failing targets. They're failing. We're failing targets of every single one of them, and policy aspirations. They're all just, you know, made up. Okay. So what the Tories have done is effectively deflect attention to the Chinese, who are pretty much leading the charge on environmental technology.
Well, you might say that, but the over 50% of China's energy is still produced by coal, and there's quite a strong argument saying, well, look, what is the point of us going to net zero when the Chinese are still churning the coal out 19 to the dozen?
The point is that they've achieved in 4 decades, five decades, if you like. In 50 years, they have achieved the industrial growth that took us a couple of centuries. And we are one of the biggest, you know, historic emitters. So our nations have produced a lot of CO2 historically. So we've made a very considerable historic contribution. We're in decline now. China has come up very quickly, it's going to peak very quickly, and they will also, I predict, reduce their emissions very quickly.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I want to add that we can do it. What Insulate Britain or XR or whoever they are, it doesn't really matter, or how badly informed they are, and what it does matter is that the government doesn't actually turn around and start insulating houses in the same way we've been doing it. We need transformative change. We need to educate people. People need to understand the scale on which we need to do this. It will create a massive, massive new growth industry, green growth industry in this country, producing natural fibre insulation, which will involve also retraining a lot of the building skills and wet trades specifically towards use of lime instead of cement. We need to understand how our buildings work. 32% of Welsh housing was built pre-1919, so over a century old. The way in which these buildings function is not reflected in any of the modelling for energy performance certificates or, you know, any of it. So we need a complete overhaul of everything. People need to understand, to know when their house was built, of what materials, how it works. And then we need appropriate fabric compatible, breathable materials for them. Only natural fibers have those properties. So we potentially, what we need to do is increase our forest areas. We need to increase our usable softwood timber production as well. It's all about resilience, sourcing. The best way to get low embodied building materials is for them to be locally or naturally sourced. Resilience, self-sufficiency, all of these things are factors that the population of the UK, like it or not, we're going to be forced by circumstance to find the solution. You know, as the famous old saying, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And it's only by seizing this opportunity, and this is our last chance, that we can actually do it.
Wow, fascinating. Well, anyway, Kerry Fielding, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. All the best.